Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. We're back. It's 13 After. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our guest and our good friend, a member of our Brain Trust, and he is our technology expert. He's the president of Association for Competitive Technologies out of beautiful downtown Washington, D.C. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you back, and I always look forward to having you with us because I like to hear about new things that I haven't heard about in the world of technology, and ask you questions about things that I have heard about that I don't understand.
Right.
So, why don't you get started, though? You had some things on your mind.
Well, one of the things that's probably going to heat up in Washington here, and you know that's near and dear to me, is this issue of digital signatures.
Right.
Because one of the things that's sort of standing in the way of the explosion of electronic commerce is that most contracts still require an actual signature, and the laws in every state with respect to electronic signatures or so-called digital signatures are varying wildly. And just for people that may not have heard of them, I mean, a digital signature is something that, like an encrypted password, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that you can get from a third party. There's some companies like VeriSign and others that is only on your machine, but then allows you to sign up for a service or buy a stock or purchase products, etc., and then sign on, you know, your digital signature by basically, you know, using a checkbox and saying, use my digital signature here.
Right.
And it's just your digital signature, and you can use that in place of sending a fax with a signature or in place of signing a hard contract.
Now, is that what do you hit a button and say, like, this is my signature button, or?
Yes, exactly.
Where does that?
In most cases, what will happen is that signature gets installed on your machine.
Mm-hmm. On your PC.
On your PC, exactly. And then you can get to it via your browser or your mail client. So if you're in Eudora or Outlook, or if you're in Netscape Navigator or Internet Explorer, there's options to make use of your digital signatures. So if you're on an electronic commerce website or something and you want to be able to order something online and mm-hmm. they need a signature for it, you'll be able to affix your electronic signature to say that you understand that you've read the license agreement or whatever.
Now, how does that work? Because all right, it resides on my PC, so that means that it's not somewhere else. It's not at some bureau somewhere, and I have to send the signature to them. And what's to protect me from someone coming in and getting it from my machine?
Well, I mean, it's not easy to get off of your machine. I mean, there's still issues. If somebody else has access to your computer, you can encrypt it so that you use a password in order
right.
to use it.
Okay.
So the point at which that you're going to affix your digital signature to some online content,
mm-hmm.
you would use a password to do it.
Okay.
So unless somebody got a hold of your password, they would have some difficulty. And that password would be local to you. There is an organization like VeriSign that has a copy of your digital signature itself so that the company receiving it can validate that that signature goes with that name and address and things like that that you've it's sort of like having a handwritten signature on file.
But
right?
It's in a form that can't be used because it has to...
It's in a form that can't be used, exactly. It's
it can only be...
the components of the signature.
Yeah.
Exactly. So nobody at VeriSign could order things on your behalf or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But they can validate that this was in fact a valid digital signature that came from you, or at least, you know, came from your machine using your password.
Now, is this just X's and O's, or is it a real image?
It's mainly X's and O's. It's like you can think of it as a unique number.
Yeah, so it's not an actual signature image itself.
Right, exactly.
Well, okay.
And there's some discussion of making use of images themselves. The problem is that's actually very easy to copy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a signature it's in digital form. Once it's scanned in, you can proliferate all over the place.
Right, okay.
This is a special encrypted, numbers and text. It's just a blob of data, basically, that's encrypted and can only be accessed via your password. It's much more secure than a picture of your signature.
How would I acquire my own digital signature?
Well, you can do that right now by going to VeriSign.
VeriSign, spell that, please.
VeriSign.com.
Okay.
And I should confirm.
Yeah, we're going to find out how good a speller Jonathan is here in a little bit, folks.
That's probably one of my worst.
Well, that's okay. I'm sure they've got variations of that name that'll still hit their website.
Yeah. But the bottom line is you can also use it to do secure encrypted communications between people on email as well.
Mm-hmm.
If two people have gotten digital signatures, then they can communicate with each other, sign these messages, and then read mail from people that have given them access to signed mail, but other people won't be able to. Encrypted mail back and forth without giving people passwords or something like that.
So basically, though, is it not going to be, instead of I know you're calling it a signature, but basically, isn't it just a password? I mean, when this email that you were just talking about that comes in, I'm not actually going to see the signature. It's just going to let me have it when I give it my password or my signature. I'm a little confused about that. Are you going to be able to see the signature that comes in?
No, you're not going to see it. The software on the other end knows that it was signed with a signature, digital signature.
Right.
And you've previously added that person to a list of people that can read mail that's been signed with your digital signature.
So you could also call it your own personal password or something instead of.
Yeah, it's like your own personal password, exactly.
Yeah.
That's kind of universal, and that you can give people limited permission to. What's the best way? You can always encrypt things, put a password on it, call them on the phone, and say, there's a file coming, and I've encrypted it with the password Penguin, and as long as they know, they can unencrypt it.
Right.
The idea behind a digital signature is that they can validate that it's a true digital signature, that it came from you, who it came from, but they won't know your password.
Exactly. Very interesting, Jonathan. Thank you for that. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about free email service. We're going to talk about learning how to create a better website and a lot of other good stuff. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Jonathan Zuck with the Association for Competitive Technologies. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. It's 20 after. All right, we're back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our guest and our good friend. He is our information technology expert. He's the president of Association for Competitive Technologies. And as I said a minute ago, folks, I told you we would find out whether Jonathan was a very good speller or not.
It's not a real word.
What I was going to say, I was about to give you a little slack there, Jonathan. I was about to say that with these domain names these days, that's really not an indication of whether you're a good speller or not. It's really more of an indication of how good a memory you have.
Yeah.
So what is the correct spelling of VeriSign.com?
It's VeriSign.
Good.
Verify, right.
Like verify, exactly. All right. Verify. VeriSign.
VeriSign.com, and you can go get certificates and start trading secure email with your friends. Because
email charge?
Without this is basically like sending a postcard through the mail. Anybody can get to it that knows how to.
Yeah. Tell me about the cost. Do you know what it costs to get a signature?
Oh, it's not very much. I mean, I want to say it's maybe, $20 for a year or something like that.
All right, good. Let's talk about free email service.
Yeah, there's been a lot of hoopla about this lately. I don't know if you, there's just about every portal website you go to now, whether it's NetCenter or MSN, there's some way to get a free email account. But what we're finding is that there's some security problems associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we should just sort of raise people's awareness. I mean, one of the things that a small business can do to save money, instead of paying for extra email addresses for their employees, they can get them free, email accounts on Yahoo or Hotmail or something like that. but it's worth knowing that there's still some bugs to be worked out in this, and that you shouldn't consider those email services to be completely secure. I mean, people have found ways to get in and read the mail and things. So if you're really concerned about the security of the email you're sending back and forth, you should get your own regular email address via your ISP, and you should do something like VeriSign and use digital signature certificates to trade email.
One of the handy things about the free email, though, is your messages don't reside on any computer. They reside in cyberspace and on some server, maybe I should say. And wherever you are in the world, if you can get online, you can get your email.
Which is true, actually, for most of your ISP email, too.
Well, if you use
PSINet or AOL or something like that, you're still going to be able to get to your mail via the web.
But if you're on the other side of the world, you've got to be able to get to that ISP. You've got to know the number.
Most of them have a web interface.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm not as familiar with that.
Yeah, I mean, like AOL, you can get to your mail via the AOL client or the AOL website.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to www.aol.com and find a way to log in and get your mail. In my area, there's a company called Errols. There's Mindspring. Almost all of them give you the web way of getting to your email.
Okay.
The benefit of some of the free email services, in addition to being free, is that you're staying there. You know, your mail can stay there if you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have it on the server for a period of time, whereas it's only sort of your most recent mail or something that's most likely going to be on the web with your regular ISP.
Right.
But most of them, recognizing that very benefit that you raise, are actually doing something like that, giving you a way to get to your mail.
See, I didn't realize the other ISPs were giving you a web access. The reason when I kind of got interested in the free emails was when my son, my audience, those who've been listening for a while know that I have a son in the Marines, and he's currently in South America on his way from Peru to Argentina, and all he has to do is be able to get online because he has a Hotmail address.
Right.
And all he has to do is get online, and he can get his email because Hotmail is basically on the internet.
And that is true, and not all ISPs let you do that, but more and more of them are.
But I'm glad. Now that is something we definitely learned today. At least I did, that more of the ISPs are offering those kinds of the web access. So that's very interesting. I'm going to get you point that out. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about money saver technology solutions for your small business. Jonathan Zuck is going to help us understand what those are. For competitive technologies, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. It's 29 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 33 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're living La Vida Loca with Jonathan Zuck, president of Association for Competitive Technologies, and we're talking about the high-tech world, and he's our expert on that matter. And Jonathan, before we move on, you had one last thing you want to tell us about free email.
Yeah, it's one of the latest things that's come out. If you go to www.mytalk.com, M-Y-T-A-L-K.com,
okay.
It's a similar service to Hotmail. In that you go on and you can get a free email address, you can check your mail on the web from all over the world, but they've added a capability, which is to allow you to check your mail via telephone as well. They've got a toll-free number, and you call up the toll-free number and say, read my mail, and they'll read it to you, basically. You know, a computer will read the email to you and let you reply to messages, and I haven't tried it to see just how well the replies work in terms of recognizing your voice. There might be a few typos, but and then there's one other little thing that is kind of interesting, that while you're on the phone, you can say, dial a phone number, and you can make a call anywhere in the United States for free for 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Just calling up, and they'll connect you. When the 2 minutes is up, you'll just be back where you were looking, going through your inbox in your email.
Mytalk.com. That's
very
interesting.
Mytalk.com. It's certainly worth checking out. They're new, so, I mean, I don't have a lot more information, but that's a lot of what's happening, is this kind of convergence of handheld computers and voice recognition, et cetera. You're going to be able to check your email. You're going to have phones pretty soon where, you know, email is just integrated into the regular functionality of the phone as well.
Technological convergence.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about a computer saying you're reading your email to you. In 1981, I bought the first Maxima, one of the first, they were Datsuns then, Datsun Maximus, the 810, and it had a little feature there. If you got out of your car with the lights on, a lovely lady's voice, I mean, it's this sweet little voice came on, and out from under the dash and said, "Please turn off the lights. Please turn off the lights," and that was the first time I'd ever had a device or any kind of anything that spoke to me, which I thought was pretty cool. But the funny thing was, people would come up to me in parking lots and say, "Is this the car that talks? Could I hear it talk?" And I would stand there with the door open and turn the lights on, and they'd hear this woman say, "Please turn off the lights," and they'd go away, happy as they could be.
Now, the car also say confusing things like, "The door is ajar."
Yeah.
"No, it's not. It's the door."
Oh, no, John, that's bad. Now, but this particular one didn't do that. It only talked about the lights, but later ones did. But it's just an indication of, it's interesting to see the development of computers and the way we...
That was just a recorded voice. It wasn't having to dynamically speak.
No, that's right. But
you're having pretty decent voice synthesis. Mm-hmm. I mean, the two technologies that are coming, that are really just on our horizon, are voice recognition and voice synthesis, and they're both very, very close to being good. I mean, they're both technologies that they almost need to be perfect to be acceptable.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Where 90% isn't good enough for voice recognition, for example.
Well,
they're getting very close.
The thing that really made me want to bring that up was just the way we now interact with technology on a one-on-one basis. Mono a machine, I guess maybe I should say. But anyway, let's talk about Money Saver Technology solutions for small businesses. What are some of those you got
in mind? Well, it's just the thing that, I've had a couple of small businesses and things, and oftentimes the budgets of small businesses are constrained. And there's a lot of ways to engage in overkill, if you will, when it comes to making technology investments within your small business. One of the areas in which people sometimes overspend is in the area of accounting. As they try to move from, the little checkbook or a handwritten ledger or something to a computerized solution, they sometimes buy a big accounting package that they don't necessarily need for their business.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's enough just to get a piece of software that can generate a decent invoice, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a number of shareware softwares out there. There's one that you can check out at bls-software.com. Bls-software.com has a product called Invoice 98. That you can just download and try and see if it'll do the job for you. And very often, a product like this will do just what you need in terms of like getting out a quick invoice or something like that.
Hmm.
Another area that you often see people perhaps spend more quickly than they need to is in networking. You've got a small business and maybe you've got a couple of machines. Do you need to do networking right away? And that's not always the case, and it adds some complexity to the setup of your computers.
Now, you're talking about electronic networking. Electronic networking.
Sorry, networking your computer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And
the reason I wanted to make sure we cleared that up was because we talk about other kinds of networking on the show, and I'm sure most people would know what you
interpersonal networking.
Yeah.
Right,
okay.
And which is very valuable and doesn't cost very much. So
but it's
I
not
recommend
technology.
Plenty of that. But just networking your computers, sometimes when you're a startup business, maybe you have two computers, there's other solutions like a printer connector or maybe even a zip drive for sharing information.
Yeah, I want to talk about that some more, and I have another question about networking, electronic networking that I want to ask you about when we come back. Jonathan, stand by. Jonathan Zuck, folks, the president of Association for Competitive Technologies. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate. We will be right back. Please. Welcome back, heroes. Thank you for joining us. It's 44 After. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Jonathan Zuck is our guest and our good friend. He is the president of Association for Competitive Technologies. And Jonathan, before we go any further, I want you to tell people how we can contact you and how we can join your organization.
Sure. The Association for Competitive Technology is a trade association, but individuals can join too just to stay informed. And like I said, the hot issue is trying to get right now is trying to get digital signature legislation passed so that you can more easily move us into the world of electronic commerce. To find out more about us or to sign up, come to our website, which is www.actonline.org.
And the cost to sign up to be a member of your organization is not as much as you might think.
Right. If you're an individual who just wants to stay informed, it's free. And if you're any, it's $100. So come on out to the website and check out.
I recommend you do that, folks. They've got an excellent website, and as you can tell, Jonathan knows his stuff, and it's a great opportunity for you to keep up with what's going on in the technology, in the world of technology. Jonathan, remind me about what we were talking about toward the end there. I had a lot of other things that we were talking about.
Sure.
I had a question for you. Help me remember.
I mean, we were talking about networking.
Oh, yes, I know, right.
And so starting to say when the music started to play was that's a couple of substitutes for a network. One is a printer switcher, where you plug two computers into a box that's an A-B switch and lets you choose which computer is sending signals to the printer.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I think small businesses should all invest in is something called a zip drive.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you talked about those on the show or people have heard of them.
We haven't, but I have three of them.
But, they're immensely valuable. Basically, it's a replacement. It's a type of floppy disk that you can connect to the parallel port of your computer, and this disk can hold 100 megabytes worth of information. So
There's one that'll hold 250.
Which is great for your internal use for backups and stuff.
But it'll also...
The one that holds 100 has become a real standard.
It has, but
so if you need to take a bunch of documents to the printer or to Kinko's or something, you can pretty much count on there being a zip drive there.
Exactly, and you can get a... for like $100, you can get a zip drive and maybe a handful of drives, cassettes. But it's actually, you called it a floppy. It's actually a little hard drive. Listen, my first hard drive was 10 megabytes.
Well, that's true, but that was a little while ago.
That was a while ago, that's for sure. No, I remember now what I was going to ask you about the networking. Let's raise the networking discussion a little bit to another level.
Uh-huh.
Have you been keeping up with what IBM is doing with the networking and with the networking that they've been talking about, sort of a cyberspace networking?
They're doing a lot of different stuff. Which thing is it you're talking?
Well,
about?
I was just thinking of how we're going to be networking, not by hardwiring to the people in the next room, but by being cyber-wired, so to speak, to someone across the country, around the world.
Well, you have a lot of different technologies. There's actually a lot of wire that's been laid across the country. There's the ATM network, which is what runs all those money machines, but it's actually a very high-speed, very secure network.
Right.
And people are laying ATM networks across the country, and so there's a potential that could become a part of a commercial networking backbone. The internet can be used for setting up something that's called a virtual private network.
Mm-hmm.
And all a virtual private network really is that you're using the internet as your network.
As your network.
You're setting up sufficient security so that
yes.
it becomes private. For your use. So there's software and standards that you'd put in place to do that.
That's the way, that was the thing I was headed toward, that I wanted you to talk to us a little bit about that, because that's so interesting to me. And so much of what we're doing and what we're going to be doing is being raised up from the real to the virtual. And this allows me to make a natural transition into something that I know you wanted to talk about today, and that's what Sun is doing. And that's offering free software over the web.
Right. I mean, before long, everywhere you have an outlet, you're going to have an internet. You're going to have a network connection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's definitely where the world is going. New homes that are being built today, many of them are being built in such a way that there's a network connection right next to every outlet so that you can, have a computer, in bed or a computer that... gets a simultaneous television feed and recipe database in your kitchen or things like that.
And just about the time that everything gets hardwired, somebody will come up with the really the excellent infrared, I should say. I think it's infrared, isn't that the non-wired connection that you can make now? Infrared,
you know, infrared is also just wireless, cellular signals and things of that sort. I mean, a lot of people like Qualcomm and Nokia, et cetera, are investing in wireless internet connection.
Don't spend too much money on the hardwire, because about the time that you use it for a month or two or a year or whatever, you're going to have wireless and infrared.
Right. All that stuff is coming down the pike, and if you're a small business, you're better off, like I said, passing information around via zip disk, probably.
That's a good idea. Stand by, Jonathan. We're going to take a break. Folks, it's 50 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Jonathan Zuck, the president of the Association for Competitive Technology. Stay with us, please. We are back. It's 54 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Please check that out, because when you get there, you can hear this interview on demand until it's replaced with the next day's show. And so if you just tuned in late and you didn't get all of our conversation with Jonathan Zuck, the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies, you can go to my website and hear the rest of it, as well as the hour before this one. Jonathan, as we wrap up the hour, Sun Microsystems is doing something that I heard Bill Gates talk about a few years ago, and that was making the power, the real power of what you do with the computer, actually be not on the computer, but actually be out there online.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that Bill Gates, I think, is still a little bit wary of because of technologies like speech recognition, voice synthesis, et cetera. I think there's still going to be in the future, a lot of call for having a PC, but Sun is definitely oriented towards servers. What they want to sell are a lot of servers, and so their vision of the world, and it's an interesting one, is in which a lot of the big applications that you use are actually stored on the server. I mean, that was the notion mm-hmm. behind Java and some other things.
Yeah.
And most recently, they purchased a product called Star Office Products. And if you go to the Sun website, you can now get access to that software for free and use it right off of the web, word processing and spreadsheets, et cetera.
Yep.
And then if there's an update, then they just update it once on their server. You don't need to install it again on your computer or buy an upgrade or whatever. And they can you can make use of software that you're used to using, you know, things like word processing and spreadsheets, all right off the server instead of having a lot loaded on your machine.
Yeah, and the thing is that the day if you take that to the next level, then now what we've got is a day when you don't even have a computer on your desk. You have a screen with a hookup to the internet, and we've talked about this before, Jonathan. You and I think some other folks as well. And basically, you go and get the power, the processing power off the internet. And I don't know if you saw the journal this week, but the president of Sun Microsystems wrote an article. Did you see that? Scott McNeely, and he said that the title of the article is, if I remember, it was in the op-ed section, said, "Don't buy my software." And what he was saying was, I'm not worried if consumers don't want to buy my software because networks will, because of the way they're going to do it.
Right. Exactly. People on he'll start selling one copy for $500,000 instead of $500,000 copies for $1.
Right, exactly.
And that's definitely a different business model, and it's going to be interesting how that falls out. I mean, there have been some other attempts. Oracle was trying to pioneer something called the network computer, but people like still having data stored on their own machine.
But that's cultural, Jonathan.
They need to find out where they. Well, but it's also where. Are the letters that you write, do you want them stored on
well,
a server
true.
Someplace else?
Good point, good point. But I mean, from the standpoint of how you buy your software, that's going to change, and that culture will change. We've got to wrap it up for this hour, Jonathan. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right, that sounds great.
Thank you, sir. Jonathan Zuck, the President of Association for Competitive Technologies. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, never be afraid to try something new. Amateurs built the Ark. Professionals built the Titanic. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.